Welcome to the More Than Fitness Podcast.
How are you doing, man? It's good to, I guess, whatever you want to call this, formally, informally, face-to-face. It's nice to meet you, man.
Yeah, I'm doing well. I before COVID hit, my typical Thursday, I would get up. It's a day off for me, like meaning I don't, Thursdays are typically a day I don't go and coach. It's like a catch-up on life day. I call it like Tony time days where I can just go train. I can go do some reading, catch up on some writing.
I love it.
You know, pre-COVID, that was my Thursdays where it was just kind of like a chill day. And today, Thursdays are still a day off, but there's just always something to be doing. And today it was back to somewhat of a pre-COVID where I went and trained. I went and got a little pizza, you know, kind of casually strolled back here for this interview. And
there you go.
So yeah, good day so far. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's about to be even better with an amazing interview that we're about to have conversation, whatever you want to call it. So,
yeah,
man, I'm stoked because I know you're a veteran in this industry I've looked up to guys like you and Eric Cressy and Dean Somerset, and I used to read T-Nation articles back in the day and everything, and your name would always pop up. And so it's cool to kind of have this come to fruition, and hopefully I can pick your brain a little bit, because that's what these are for, man. I'm telling you, like, these are my ways of spending 60 minutes with someone I look up to and pick their brain, more so for selfish reasons, but it also helps that the audience is the three people that listen to my podcast, they're here as well. So we can hopefully entertain them too.
And thank you for the kind words. It's always nice to know that I'm still relevant. So
you absolutely are. How's your injury going? You have an Achilles injury, correct?
Yeah. So I am. What's it? It was 2 months ago today, actually. I ruptured it. So I am. I'm 7 weeks post surgery. I guess it's going as well as it can. Like I'm very fortunate in that I live in a city that's a very strong city to live in terms of like medical and health coverage, and you know, having a bunch of smart people to work with. My physician, my surgeon was phenomenal. I was lucky in that I had a fairly small incision for my surgery, so healing went pretty quick in terms of like it closing well and not getting infected, and you know, no blood clotting. So all told, like, rehab has been going pretty smoothly. Certainly there's some overarching, annoyances with this injury, but, we're getting through it.
Good deal. Good deal, man. I'm happy to hear that. It's always cool to, I saw your post the other day with the leg extensions that you made up. And I was just that is a coach right there. Like that is it. Like you said, you MacGyvered the shit out of that.
Well, I'm a strong advocate of, it's a term that I stole from another strength coach, Chris Case, of the trainable menu. When I got this injury, and it's a pretty, you know, Achilles rupture is a pretty significant injury. It can be a pretty pesky injury.
Yeah.
I really wanted to, send the message in a positive way that you got to be able to find your trainable menu regardless of the injury, that you can generally train around pretty much anything. With this Achilles injury, that's kind of what I'm trying to do on Instagram in particular, is just showcase to people like, hey, yes, I'm hurt, but I am still training. Like I'm trying to do what I can lower body wise, but you know, trying to really find, okay, I can hammer my bench, I can hammer my chin-ups, I can do arm farm. But specifically to lower body, like I want to try to, because I'm sure you know how much I love deadlifts.
Yes.
And it's been hurting my heart that I can't deadlift.
I understand.
For the past 2 months, but I'm just trying to stave off as much of a decline in numbers there as I can. So I've really been trying to highlight on Instagram this trainable menu concept, particularly with lower body. Just showing people that, yeah, you know, I'm on the affected side, the side that I had surgery. It's been more open chain, more MacGyver type stuff. But I'm staying pretty aggressive with training my good side, you know, doing some half field split squats and some RDLs. And, but I think all told, like I've been training, even though it's been conservative for me, it's probably pretty aggressive training for most people still. But just trying to do it in a smart way. Like I had my surgeon's, you know, voice is in my head. It's like, don't be stupid. I'm certainly playing the conservative card, but not loading my Achilles and stretching it, trying to stay off it as much as possible. The message I've been sending has been resonating pretty well. I've had numerous people reach out who have recently ruptured their Achilles or, you know, hurt something somewhere else in their body, whether it be lower back or knee. And the message is seemingly resonating, which is cool.
Yeah, right on. Yeah, no. And I think if you're anybody who's a serious lifter, most of the people, I'm going to have some beginners that listen to this, but more of my audience is going to be more like intermediate lifters, advanced lifters, things like that. And anybody who's trained, you know, hard for a consistent amount of years, you're likely going to have some type of tweak, some type of injury.
It's inevitable.
It is inevitable. And I think whenever that happens and things that I talk about with my clients and things now, like your new goal is the rehab of that injury. Like you have to treat it just as if you're, you know, periodizing a new plan or something like that to build muscle or to lose fat or to gain strength. It's like injury rehab is your new goal and you have to give as much effort or lack thereof, I guess, if you need to rest and things like that, like whatever the doc says, like that has to be your new focus. And it's just like the sooner that you can rehab that and get through it and not, you know, do anything dumb and get through that injury, then you can get back to getting things back to normal and then getting stronger again.
Yeah. And, I've tried to take, I mean, there's a lot of anecdote, but certainly there's quite a bit of research that backs up, like, you know, training one limb, or what I would say the non-affected side, or I'm trying, like psychologically speaking, I'm really trying to avoid saying my injured side or my bad side. When I'm talking about this, I'm trying to say like my non-affected side or, whatever adjective we can come up here, but there is a lot of research that backs up, like training that side is going to have a carryover to the affected side, whether it be neurally, it's just the nervous system is a pretty,
it's so cool. It's cool.
It's a very well-developed system.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then, but I firmly believe that me training that side to stay strong, is only going to help expedite the rehab and when I do return to what quote unquote normal training, I feel like the bounce back is going to be a lot quicker, compared to if I just kind of took like a meh approach, to this. So, and not to mention too, just mentally, you know, the mental gymnastics of, you know, going through an injury, because you know, for active people, when you can't train like you want to train, it can be. Are we allowed to swear on this podcast, by the way?
Absolutely.
Okay. It can be a mind fuck.
Yeah.
And so certainly, you know, me staying on top of that from a selfish psychological standpoint has been a game changer. So how we reframe an injury is individual. Like certainly not everyone's going to be as gung-ho, and that's fine. Like, I mean, I've actually had a few conversations with people where it's like, listen, if you're not ready, you're not ready. Like there's no timetable on post-injury. Like you have to get after it at this point, or, you know, if you want to take this time off and, you know, develop a new hobby, then, or write a screenplay, or I don't know, like that's fine.
Yeah.
So with me, you know, but given what I do for a living, it's really not an option. Like,
yeah, yeah.
I find it is, you know, like training is really, I mean, I'm going to find a way. It seems like that's, you know, that's what's, you know, a lot of people enjoy that message. So
yeah. Of course. Cool. Of course. And to make it, applicable in a broader sense, I think COVID is, in a weird metaphorical way, like this is our training injury that a lot of people, so I don't know I'm in Lexington, Kentucky and gyms are open here. Is Boston, what's the gym situation like there?
They just started opening. So there's been, it's kind of been stages. Like, you know, I've, like everyone, there's a state, there's a phase one, phase two, phase three, but then within each phase, there's like part one, part two, part three.
Right.
So here in Boston, you know, thankfully, because I was a smaller studio and I really only do personal training or semi-private, you know, I was able to open up my doors coming up on like 4 weeks ago, three, 4 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Larger, big box gyms just opened up earlier this week.
Right.
Like an Equinox, Boston Sports Book.
How did that feel? Sorry to cut you off. How did that feel to open things back up again?
Oh, I felt rusty.
Rusty?
Because I mean, essentially, I mean, I think the word pivot has never been more reverberated like that. You can't in this realm of COVID, like that is the one word that I'm like growing tired of hearing. But there's really no other way to say it. You know, I made the pivot like every other strength conditioning specialist or professional where, you know, virtually, a handful of my clients went virtual, which is great. I mean, they didn't have to, but they wanted to support me and I wanted to support them and make sure they were still
That's cool.
something.
Yeah.
You know, I had several of my clients like raid my gym. I was just like, hey, like, as long as I have enough here that me and my wife can do stuff, like I'm fine. Like, you know, take the kettlebells, the bands, like take them, a few barbells, plates. You know, I want you guys to stay active. And then we can work virtually. So I was able to do that, but certainly that's not the same.
Right.
Like working with people in person. So when we were able to open, like the first few days, I felt pretty rusty. Like, oh, what's a front squat? Like, what is this thing? Like, what's this hexagonal shaped bar called? Like, what do you use it for?
Right.
But certainly it was nice to see people in person for the first time in several weeks.
I bet.
So it was nice to catch up and just having like, even if it was just like a little amuse-bouche of it, like of normalcy, you know, that like just being back to my normal schedule where it's like, okay, I'm leaving now to go coach and do my job. That was lovely.
Yeah. The event of like going to work or going to the gym.
Yeah. You know, and I've been very lucky. I think I'm running at like, I'm between 70 and 75% of my clients have already come back.
That's great.
Which is pretty good. And I'm not running at full capacity yet. And then,
sure.
I mean, my schedule is full. Like each time slot that I have available is full.
Right.
I can only limit it to one or two people at a time. Whereas normally I might have three or four, which is, I mean, far be it for me to complain about that. Like that's, I just like being back to work. And people love being back. I mean, I think one of the more rewarding things is to see people come back and realize how much they miss being in like to have a barbell in their hands.
Yes.
You know, it was quite nice to see their reaction to that. Like it was like felt good to have like, you know, Wu-Tang playing in the background and kind of like yelling the cues out for their squatting or their deadlift cues. And so yeah, it's been nice, and I hope to hold on to it for as long as possible. But, you know, I'm not optimistic that we're going to stay open, you know, through the fall, winter. I mean, I don't know. The thing about Massachusetts and Boston, we're doing very well. I think, you know, our caseload is pretty minimal right now. I mean, we were hit hard in the beginning, but it's been very, you know, people are respecting the rules, you know, the unspoken rules now. So we're doing pretty good. So
good. That's good to hear.
You know, fingers crossed.
Right, right. No, absolutely. I understand completely. The one thing that I really loved that you put out a few months ago was the article about, it was called Maintaining a Sense of Calm and Comfort, How Fitness Professionals Can Serve Their Clients Amidst the Chaos.
Sometimes I forget what I write. Yeah.
Listen,
yeah, okay.
I'll remind you, yeah, because it was great. And I you know, I have some personal trainers that listen to this and then just more just average gym goers and things like that. But I want to know more so your own personal mental struggle. So me, so I've been an online coach. This has been my full-time job. So I'm 26. I've been doing this for about like, you know, 3-4 years tops, and doing it full-time for like 2 years total. Mm-hmm. To be quick, and like last year had a pretty good year. And then this year, obviously things have, you know, Corona's hit, people aren't spending their extra money on hiring an online personal trainer or something like that. But as a veteran in the field, and as things, you know, I know that things ebb and flow, right? And of course, right now they're really ebbing with coronavirus. But how have you dealt mentally, just with one, I think the uncertainty, and two, I don't know, it's still, even knowing that there's coronavirus, I still struggle with comparing myself to like what I did last year, or something like that. How do you deal with that?
You know, I'm my wife would probably be appalled that I can't remember. My wife's a psychologist, so
oh, cool.
She might be appalled that I can't remember the stages of grief. I forgot who they're named after.
Denial, but, acceptance. There's a few others, something like that.
You know, I too am there still. Like, I mean, I look back at how 2019 was a pretty darn good year, professionally and, you know, with my family. I mean, it was just a good year. And certainly when I look at it financially, that was my best year yet. And that in 2020 was supposed to be like this even better year. To the point where it's like, hey, you know, I had all these speaking engagements lined up across the world. I was going to be moving my current studio to a larger footprint in Boston right about now, actually. And all that, it was away.
Right.
In a matter of, like, when COVID first hit, I was actually in Europe. I was presenting. I was in Greece.
Oh, wow.
I was in Athens. And then I went to London. I went full Fred. I had like a little pit stop in Paris. I know I sound really douchey right now. So I was in Paris.
Digital nomad life. That's what you are. Digital nomad.
You know, my dean and I were presenting in Athens. He left to go home, but then I had a few workshops lined up in London. So I did like a little pit stop in Paris, but I'd never been there. Then I was in London. When it was kind of getting a little bit sort of scary, like people were like, you definitely saw more masked out and, you know, people were kind of like not talking, keeping their distance. And then by the time I got home, I think it was 3 days later, that then stuff started to shut down in terms of like, you know, international travel. You know, and then once that happened, pretty much I said goodbye to all my speaking engagements for the rest of the year. Or at least for the summer, and then I'm thinking, yes, even in the fall, it's going to be they're pretty much.
And I'm assuming you depend on that as a decent chunk of change, right?
It's a decent chunk. I mean, thankfully, I mean, I think my bigger what I eventually was going to get to is like the bigger like umbrella theme here is as a fitness professional, I think it behooves you to be adaptable and have a hybrid approach.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I think. Online training, of course, is part of that discussion. I certainly think, you know, coaching people in person still holds a lot of value. But certainly, yes, you know, you might be somebody who does quite a bit of presenting or making YouTube videos or writing or producing educational content or products. You know, I think at this point in time, if Corona has taught us anything, it's that you're going to have to generate other revenue streams,
mm-hmm.
other than just online training or just in-person coaching, or, you know, you have to be adaptable and be able to like switch over to one or the other, or have a certain percentage here and a certain percentage there and slide it this way when this happens.
Right.
So yeah, I think that would be the overarching message is that, if you're not planning that now, given, okay, we've had a shutdown, we've all had the panic, like, oh shit, what am I going to do? I lost all my clients, I lost it. Like, and it's probably going to happen again because now we're starting to open and then it's probably going to shut down. I don't think it's going to be for another 3 month stretch, but it might be a couple weeks, it might be a month. You know, I think you need to be planning that.
Right.
You know, so even if it's just like, if you're someone like me who predominantly does more in-person coaching. Yes, I dabble in online stuff, but you need, if you're not setting up some sort of contingency plan with your in-person client saying, listen, if I have to shut down again, this is what's going to happen. So for example, what I did was I contacted Perform Better, which was very close to Boston. I've had a relationship with them for years. I said, listen, like, I would like to see if I could talk with you guys about setting up some sort of special code that I can give to my clients for some kind of discount for minimal stuff. I'm talking kettlebells, bands, TRX.
Right.
Just so I know that, that they have, my clients have something at home that they can have, in order, like, if I shut down, I, we can still continue with some form of virtual training.
After, yeah. Right.
You know, when it happens again. I mean, some of my clients have actually have pretty spectacular home gyms anyway.
Right. I found that out with some of my clients too. I'm like, damn, I'm jealous of your, I'm jealous.
They were fine. Like, I mean, I still wrote their programming. Some of them just did, you know, they paid for their program. And then I was like, okay, see you in a month. Others did the program and they did a session or two a week virtually. Fine. But I think if you're a coach who works predominantly with in-person clients, whether you're working at a commercial gym or whatever, you should be forming a contingency plan saying, okay, if I get shut down again and you're unable to gain access to the gym that I train you at, here's plan B.
Mm-hmm.
And I also was lucky enough in that during the first few weeks of COVID, my web guy who does all my website stuff, you know, he and I developed a platform where I could deliver at home programs with minimal equipment. Mm-hmm. So basically just weekly canned, 3 times a week programs of, like, it was just body weight, kettlebells, dumbbells, and bands.
Sure.
And I was like, here we go. You know, and over the course of COVID, now I have 12 weeks worth of that.
Mm-hmm.
So if we do shut down again, I could probably just resell that or repurpose it as a package.
Right.
Saying, hey, your gym shut down. Here's 3 months of at-home program you can purchase or buy. Mm-hmm. At, you know, not an exorbitant cost, of course, but
yeah.
So that's something that I'll be able to do, if this happens again.
In the past, yeah. Is that basically what, cause I'm sure you've gone through, this hasn't been your first moment of uncertainty as a coach or as a business owner or anything like that. In the past, do you always kind of go back to, okay, just, I've got to figure out a plan. Like, I've got to just scratch every, like,
well,
figure out
what
I'm.
It's funny because I'm not at all planner. I'm not like
okay.
one of the questions I absolutely abhor is when someone asks me, like, oh, what's your 5-year plan?
Right, right.
I'm not that person at all. Like, I'm a stark contrast than Eric and Pete.
Okay.
who for those who don't know, like, I co-founded Cressy Sports Performance with Eric Cressy and Pete Dupuy.
Mm-hmm.
Both of those guys know their numbers, they plan, particularly Pete. Like, Pete knows, like, he's the epitome of a planner.
Okay.
I am not.
Yeah. Me and you are similar in that aspect for sure.
I just kind of, you know, I'm very much, I roll with the punches. I feel like I don't get too stressed where I start, like, you know, throwing my face into a wall and I'm like, ah,
yeah.
You know, I'm pretty good with rolling with the punches and adapting and doing what I need to do to get shit done.
Right.
But, you know, I also have the luxury of having career capital. I'm approaching 2 decades in the industry. I'm a recognizable name, and I don't say that to be pompous. I'm a recognizable name. Like, I don't, it's fairly easy for me to find clients for work if I have to.
Right.
If I write an article or if I release something, you know, it's probably going to get some sort of traction. Like, I'm not going to get, like, influencer traffic, but I can generate revenue in other means.
Here's a question I have for you based off. I'm just going to keep interrupting you because
you
say things and then questions pop into my mind. And I had something written down here and I feel like this is a good segue to it, but I feel like I've heard other, more successful people, not only in the fitness industry, but other industries as well, that in the beginning, because right now, yes, you do have that career capital and things like that, but I'm trying to rewind back to maybe when you're more around in my position or within the first 5 years and things were a lot more uncertain. I feel like it's very difficult to stick with things even if you are putting out really great work, like I feel like you have to put out a lot of great work for a long time without even being noticed and still continue to keep trying to pump out great work.
That is a great allegory of the industry. Yes.
Okay.
I don't envy young fitness professionals.
Right.
Because again, it's a catch 22 sort of, like, it's very, and it, like, I'm sure I'm repeating myself. I'm sure I say this on more than one podcast, but it's never been easier to get your shit out there. It's very easy to produce content and put it out in the world because mm-hmm. we have all these different platforms that we can use, whether it's podcasting, TikTok, Instagram, a blog. There's a myriad of ways to do it. However, it's never been harder to gain people's attention.
Right.
Because everyone's vying for everyone else's attention and followers. And, you know, it's like no one is paying attention for more than 2 minutes. And that's probably longer than what most people pay attention for.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I do think the approach here, I'm very old school. My advice is the law of consistency.
Yeah.
You have to consistently put out good content, irrelevant content, content that people, that resonates with people and that they build a rapport with you. And then eventually, you'll have your following. I don't know who wrote the book or, you know, what it, I don't know. I might even be making the number up. I think I've heard people say a few times, like, you know, all you really need is, 100 followers or clients.
Oh, are you talking about the 1,000 True Fans by Kevin Kelly?
Maybe it's 1,000. Okay. No, yeah. It's 10.
That sounds great. We're there. I'm good.
But yeah, to me, content, it reigns supreme at all costs. Like, you have to, and yes, it's a challenge. But I mean, I look back early in my career, okay, when I was 26 going into my 30s, and you know, I started writing blogs and I did it consistently. And before I knew it, I had 2,000 blog posts out there in the universe. And, you know, when you write that much, number one, you're going to get better at writing.
Yeah. For sure.
Number two, like, it's going to get read. I mean, it's impossible to write that much content and that's how, you know, if anyone's interested in like getting published in like Mental or T Nation or any, like, they find you. Like, you don't, the approach is not you reaching out to them saying, hey, like, look at me and look at this article. Like, no, they will, Lou Schuler says this all the time. When the industry is ready, it will let you know.
Yeah.
And they will find you. Like, T Nation will find you. Men's Health will find you. You know, whether it's via your Instagram feed or whatever. If you're putting out good content, it's eventually going to get read. So yes. It could be a mind fuck, because if you feel like no one's reading it, then it's like, oh, why do I even continue doing it? Stick with it. I'm telling you, it will pay off.
And you also see so many of your contemporaries that just seemingly are doing so amazing, and you're the only one that's doing bad, right? Or
that's what sucks about social media is that rose colored lens that everyone puts out on social media, and we all know that. Everyone suffers and hurts and has a bad day and, you know, is frustrated. Social media is not real life.
Mm-hmm, right.
We have to constantly remind ourselves that.
Yeah.
However, I won't lie and say when I read a good piece of writing, I get pissed that I didn't write it.
Right.
Like, I hate that person. They're so good. They're so freaking good. Yeah. Or if I see a cool looking exercise, I'm pissed that my brain just doesn't function that way. And I never would have thought of doing it that way.
Yeah.
But that's how you learn too. And that brings on the conversation of networking and how important that is. And, you know, reaching out to individuals that you look up to or follow. And, you know, I mean, the fitness industry is a very, giving industry. It's very tiny. I mean, it's not like a huge industry.
Right.
You know, even, you know, the names, we all know each other across paths, and there's a lot of cross pollination there.
Mm-hmm.
But networking is huge. but there's a right way to do it, of course.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to be like, hey, one thing you don't email me and say, hey, Tony, I want to write a guest post for you.
Sure.
Oh, you want it? That's just not how you do it.
Yeah.
You kind of, unfortunately, you have to like butter them up a little bit. Like for instance, like when you emailed me.
Yeah.
Perfect. You did it perfectly.
Thank you.
Like in a way where it's just, and again, I don't need that. I don't need my ego stroke. That's not what I'm implying.
Right.
But the way you reached out, like you made it very personable. Like, oh, I read this article. Like, he's read my stuff. Like, that's great. Like, and he's a fan of it. And then you use a little bit of humor and it, like, obviously your personality. And
it wasn't
just like this cut and paste approach. And you can see those from a mile away.
Yeah. It's so interesting because all you're saying, we can get so bogged down with the networking tactics or even just like social media and business in general, like with networking and like just being, and I think it's a testament to your success and other people like Eric Cressy and the people who are just good people and they're not trying to necessarily like network with you so that they can get something. It's more so just like, hey, you're being a person first, like reaching out, like being a good friend. And then also with business, it's like, we have to remember that we're just helping, like we're just being generous and helping people.
Sure.
People have problems and we have to solve them. I think you can get so caught up in trying to make things perfect with like tactics or what's the best way to optimize it. We forget to just have that human aspect of it, which I think you do a really good job of and why people are attracted to your work. And so, I think that's, yeah.
Yeah, sure. That's right.
No, 100%.
Yeah, I think the more, I mean, it sounds very cliche and probably a very vanilla thing to say, but the more authentic you are to yourself, and not trying to be something or somebody that you're not, I think that it'll work out well. It'll be fine
for sure.
Yeah, that's all. Like I said, not a very revelatory thing to say, but no, it's very true.
It works. It absolutely works. Yeah. Consistency and being a good person goes a long way. One thing I wanted to touch on with you as well, because I'm going through this transition period. So I used to compete in natural bodybuilding, actually. So I did extreme. I was at the extreme of the extreme, you know, standing up with the tanner, everything. And that was back whenever I was in college. I was able to work out 6 days a week, 2 hours at a time, no problem. And then now I am, I'm getting older. My priorities are changing. I've got this career that I've got to take care of. I was traveling more, but I'm trying to pick up other hobbies. I care about different shit besides just fitness.
Yeah, you know, I think that's important.
You know what I'm saying? What I'm curious is how has your, your values and because you're even a step, you're super old, Tony. That's what, no, I'm kidding. How has your priorities and values kind of changed over time?
So I think this is a very good talking point because I do feel it's important to have a life outside of the industry.
Absolutely.
I mean, as with any industry, whether we're talking about the fitness industry or whether you're talking about lawyering. Sure. Which I know is not the actual term, but you're going to have your people who are hardcore into it. And it's like the people who rise to the top for a reason. Mm-hmm. They're just wired a little bit differently than the rest of us. And, they're workaholics and, that's how they're wired.
Sure.
Whether we want to call them type A, sure. I'm not type A at all.
Right.
I think part of, like using the example of my writing, for example, like early on when I started writing my own blog posts and like starting getting featured in Teen Nation, I was not afraid to include little like glimpses or snapshots of like my personal life to a degree. Like I include a lot of pop culture references in my articles.
Mm-hmm.
I swear.
Yeah.
In a way that's not like over the top.
Or just doing it just to do it. It's just how you naturally talk.
So I think, coming across as a person, part of that is it, part of doing that is having, you know, bringing in your interests and the stuff that you like. And for me, it's movies. Like I've always loved movies.
Oh my gosh. I love movies too. We might go down a rabbit hole.
I mean, it's such a profound thing. Not many people love movies, but I love talking about movies. My wife thinks I'm the biggest nerd because we'll be watching some random show or movie and she'll be like, who is that? And I'll say, so-and-so. He was in such and such this year. I'm like Rain Man. I'm like, oh, in 1984, he started, you know, it's just like.
Yeah.
But even when it comes to like reading, like I don't just read stuff in my field. Yes, I think that's important, but I'm reading nonfiction and fiction and if anything, that helps me be a better writer too.
Yeah.
I'm into my cat. Before we had our little guy, my wife and I, the cat was our kid.
Yes.
And I would include, you know, she was in my videos and pictures and there's people when I travel to speak know my cat's name. Like they're like, "How's Dagny?"
Yeah.
And I'm like, "Oh, she's great." Like,
listen, I hope my audience right now is like smiling because I'm going through this exact same stage with my girlfriend and our cat's name's Carl with a K. And we just recently got him I think just a couple months ago, and he is literally the light of our life right now. He is our child.
That's how it works.
And I include him in everything now. Because he's just there and he's so adorable.
But that's how people relate to you too.
Yes, like, 100%.
I can't tell you. I'm a self-proclaimed introvert, and then having a cat ties in very well with that.
Of course.
You know, I love going to the movies by myself, which some people think is weird. I think it's the best thing ever.
I'm down.
I hang out when they were open. I hang out in bookstores and I'll sit there and just read and kind of go be in my own thoughts and by myself. And
sure.
I don't know where I'm going with that, but
have you always done that? Have you always been that way?
I've always been an introvert. Yeah.
Okay.
High school. I didn't go to parties in high school. I didn't even in college. I was a collegiate athlete. Like I played baseball all 4 years in college, and yes, I would go to baseball parties. But I would always leave after an hour, hour and a half. I was usually the DJ. Actually, I would make the mixtape, bring in, play the mixtape, and then I'd leave.
That's amazing. The mixtape. Yes. Yeah.
So it was like, yeah, there's a little, you know, little history lesson on Tony G there.
I love it.
I've always been kind of more on the introverted side. And actually, I think, you know, my wife and I do a workshop together called Strong Body, Strong Mind. We always bring up this whole idea of extroversion, introversion, and what do these mean, and how the parallels with coaching and how we have to adapt our coaching style to different people. And in extroversion, an introversion, it is a spectrum. You're not just one or the other. But when I'm presenting in front of people, I can't be introvert Tony. Like I have to be
right. It would be boring.
I have to be kind of what I am now. Like
you have to put on a performance.
Yes, you're very much a performance. You're trying to infotain people.
Mm-hmm.
There's only so much you can say about scapular upper rotation for people to get bored.
Weird.
So that's how it works.
Yeah, I guess.
But I would say a vast majority of fitness professionals probably, if we're talking about the spectrum, slide a little bit more on the introverted side.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's this connotation that to be a successful coach, you have to be the rah-rah coach.
I think social media has portrayed that as well. Because you have the just up and just, what's up, guys? Welcome to my YouTube channel. It's this.
I can't stand that. Looking at, I don't know what your original question is now.
I was talking about I'm going through this evolution, the second evolution of priorities and values and things. And I've realized that as I'm closing to 30, like I'm down with, I want to make a dinner with my girlfriend and with my cat Carl and spend the night in, have an amazing dinner and then watch some TV show. Like we just finished Homeland last night.
We didn't finish last night, but we recently finished it.
Oh really?
That's one of our all time, as a couple, it's probably in our, I would say it's probably in our top five of shows that we've watched.
Let's talk about it. I want to know, not Homeland, but I want to hear some other, like, what's your top three maybe? Or at least a couple. No order, but just like, what are your favorites?
You mean mine or as we watched as a couple? Because there is a difference.
That's true. That's true. I need a little bit of both. I want a little bit of both.
I think my all-time, personally, my all-time favorite series is probably Six Feet Under.
Okay. I haven't seen.
It's a very, like, I like dark and gloomy and melancholy stuff.
Okay.
But I also like very well-written, well-acted stuff too. That's on HBO.
Okay.
But it's about a family of morticians. So.
Okay. Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So, very, very, and I would argue that that's probably has the best series finale of any show ever.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
There's no other way. There's no other show that perfectly like nailed it.
Yeah.
Like every character and how it ended. Cause then you got those people like Lost, for example. Like I love Lost.
Uh huh.
That's another one of my all time.
I haven't watched
shows.
Lost, but I know I've heard it's great though.
But, and in that ending, I know pissed a lot of people off. I wouldn't say I was pissed about it, but I was kind of like, okay, okay. But I was all about the journey.
Right.
That show, like that was the last show that I recall. Cause that was a network show. That was on ABC.
Yeah.
But most good shows now are streaming or,
yeah.
You know,
I remember my parents watching Lost. Yeah.
Yeah. Actually. And Lost was actually one of the last shows I recall, like making like it, like a point of being home to mm-hmm. like watch Lost on a Wednesday night on ABC.
Did you ever watch 24?
Of course. That was
okay.
Another one. Yeah.
Me and my girlfriend just finished that here recently. And it's just Jack Bauer is my hero. He's amazing.
But I would say, but then when we talk about comedies, because like my wife, like again, I told you earlier, she's a psychologist. So, you know, when I say I like sad, like depressing shit, like, cause I just like that stuff. That's like with her though, she actually has to deal with it in real life for her job.
Sure.
So going to watch a very depressing movie.
Yeah.
It's not fun for her.
Yeah.
And there's been a couple of times where she's gotten legitimately mad at me for taking her to go see certain movies.
Right.
One in particular, I don't know if you recall, a couple years ago, Kristen Wiig and Bill Hader did a movie called The Skeleton Twins.
I don't know.
It was an independent film. It came out, I was talking probably like 20, maybe 2012. Basically, it's about these two siblings who were suicidal.
Oh wow!
And I was like, "Oh, it's got great reviews. Like, it looks really good. Like, we should go see it." And we did. And then we were walking home. She was legitimately pissed. She's like, "I can't believe you take me to a movie, but people want to commit suicide." And like,
it hurts her internally, right?
I wore it. Like, I was like, "Okay, that's fair. That's fair."
Okay.
So then now when we talk about like comedies, like I think my favorite comedy of all time is Curb Your Enthusiasm.
I've heard so many good things about it, but I haven't watched it.
But very, you know, hilarious, but also about a pretty much an asshole.
Okay.
Or like even like Veep, you know, like it's a show about assholes and like people treating everyone poorly.
Right.
And she just like Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Sure.
You know, these are shows that I think are absolutely hilarious, but kind of are like pretty drab. Like they are kind of depressing in a way because they just treat people horribly.
Sure.
So you know, those are shows that you know that I watch.
Yes.
But as a couple, Homeland was definitely one of the ones that we enjoy. We also enjoy the Newsroom.
The Newsroom,
which was an HBO show. It was on for two. No, I think it was on for like three seasons, like back in the like 2011 to 2013 or something like that. It was HBO.
I think I've heard Newsroom.
Obviously, Game of Thrones.
You know what's funny? Me or my girlfriend have not watched Game of Thrones, and it's almost to a point to where we're like, you know, against the system. We're just like, no, we don't want to watch it because everyone else loves it so much. Like, no, we're not going to do it.
And I remember the first two seasons, maybe even three of House of Cards. We were like obsessed with that show.
That's what we were thinking about. So my girlfriend's in law school in New York right now, and that's what we're probably about to start watching is House of Cards.
Particularly the first season because it was unlike anything that you ever saw on TV, because they broke the I don't know, they call it the third wall or the fourth wall.
Oh, okay.
Because like the characters like talk to you.
Oh, interesting.
But
we also watch Prison Break.
I mean, we watch
Prison Break.
Oh yeah, that's a show I never watched. But,
okay, it's a great one.
But yeah, she and I actually watch quite a bit of TV, and that's what we do to chill. I mean, as parents.
Yeah.
you know, once the little guy goes down, it's kind of like our chill time.
Of course. Like that's
thankfully we did a very good job of sleep training him. So he is in bed at a decent time.
How old is he?
He's 3.5.
Okay. All right.
So, you know, we get a good hour and a half, 2 hours of like, okay, like let's watch something, let's go. And there's usually two or three shows that we alternate between at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Movies and TV. Yeah. I mean, I'm watching that shit all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. I know.
I'm not just writing programs and reading about strength and conditioning and, you know, quoting Zassi Orski.
You're not reading Bompa in your spare time.
No, yeah. No, just not, yeah not reading, I'm not reading linear periodization manuals or anything like that. It's
right.
So yeah, I do think it's very important to have a life outside of it. I think it's very important to be able to turn it off.
Yeah.
When you can.
Of course.
You should have points in the week. Like, you know, for example, I'm pretty hard on my Thursdays.
Mm-hmm.
I get people asking me all the time, can you do Thursday? Can you do Thursday? And I'm like, no. Like, Thursdays are my wife's private practice day.
Got it.
Which means I'm in charge of like going to get someone from daycare. And like I'm kind of the parent that day.
Sure.
But I'm also pretty hard on Sunday being like a true family day.
Okay. I like that.
Saturday is my longest coaching day. I start at 7 a.m. I'm often not done until 3.
Right.
And that is my longest day of the week. Mm-hmm. And then once I'm done, like let's say I get home at 3:30, you know, then it's like, okay, what are we going to do? Are we going to walk somewhere and go to dinner? You know, because we live in the city, so we can easily walk somewhere. It's been a little harder of late, but
right.
You know, but we go out to dinner, and then, you know, then the following day is basically laundry, breakfast,
sure,
grocery shopping. You know, there's like a small window of time on Sunday mornings where I touch up on all my distance coaching programming.
Right.
But then I'm pretty adamant that is a family day. Like, you know, it's like the three of us are just hanging out. The mm-hmm. whole day.
How big are you on alone time? I'm big on alone. Like I need a little bit of alone time, so, like to keep my own sanity.
My wife, you know, to her credit, is an extrovert.
Okay. All right.
You know, when we first started dating, that took a little bit of time of like, you know, there's a little trial and error there.
Got to navigate.
We needed a little bit of like separation from church and state.
Got it.
But yeah, she's all for it. Like she understands that sometimes, if I need to like go to the movies by myself and when movie theaters are open, that's not uncommon. Like on a Friday night, I'll say, babe, can I go see something such?
Sure.
It plays at 7, you know, and it's right down the street. She's like, yeah, fine. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been many times since Julian's been born, that I've traveled abroad for speaking engagements, which is technically alone time. I mean,
sure.
But oftentimes I'm speaking with a colleague of mine, whether it's Dean or Luke Worthington. Or
I was going to say that's, and again, sorry for cutting you off,
no,
but it's
no,
just
do it.
with, because it's so interesting because how I do, I work from home and I'm on my laptop basically all day. And then this was something like new to my girlfriend that I had to tell her. I was like, I'm still interacting with people all day long, or I'm writing, or it's like, I'm thinking of like I'm in, or I'm connecting with different people. So it's still like, I'm still having like mental conversations and mental drain. So like, that's not, yes, physically I am alone, but the actual alone time doesn't happen until actually later. Cause she goes to bed before I do. And then I stay up for about an hour or two and just, that's whenever I'll play Xbox if I want to, I'll read, I'll do, you know, just hang out. I'll do whatever I want.
Yep.
And I need that.
I like we go to bed pretty early. Like we're like in bed at 9.
Right. Okay.
You know,
we're a little different in that aspect. I'm a night owl.
But even when we're laying down, like my wife jokes, she calls it my fortress of solitude. Like as soon as I'm horizontal and I'm laying in bed, like I my ritual is like, okay, you know, we brush our teeth, we get ready for bed, and fan gets turned on for the white noise. And then as soon as I'm horizontal, it's like my book is in my hand.
Oh, okay. I see.
And I read before I go to bed. And once I'm in that position, it's like,
Oh, okay.
We often joke because she'll be like, "Oh, let's talk about our feelings. Let's talk. Let's do pillow talk." And I'm like, "No,
I gotta get my girlfriend to listen to this podcast." Yes.
I mean, every now and then I'll engage.
Of course. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, they're that's my ritual. But yeah, like she is 100% cool with me. Like if I have to travel for speaking, like she understands I'm working. It's not like I'm just going and having a grand old time.
Of course, yeah. But, vacation.
But you know, I do get a fair amount of alone time if I'm traveling abroad. Like if I'll present one or two workshops, but then in between it's kind of like my alone time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or that and I recharge, and when I come back, then, you know, I'm a better coach to my clients and I'm more, you know, I'm just, you know, that's how I recharge. And that's how introverts recharge. It isn't so much you don't like being around people. You just need to recharge differently.
Yeah.
Cause I'm the same way. Like after a day of coaching, you know, and especially when we first started dating, she'd be like, who'd you see? Tell me. And I'd be like, I was like, give me a half hour. Like,
you got to
like,
run down through your entire day again. Yeah.
I'm right there with you.
No, that I like that. And thank you for sharing that stuff. The Fortress of Solitude is hilarious.
Yeah. It's accurate. It is 100% accurate.
I love hearing that type of intricacies in people's like personal lives and just their routine and things like that. Cause I love hearing what different, like a big thing with me, whenever I work, I have weird rituals where I would like to, so there's not like a bunch of trees around me or anything, but what I'll do is on my big screen, I'll play like Planet Earth or something to that foresty green, like colorful vibe. And then I won't actually listen to it because that'll throw me off, but then I'll listen to either some type of white noise or like a river or something, but it'll give me that type of like ambiance basically to put me in a, I don't know. It's just a weird, it makes me feel better. So I like hearing little weird things, whether it's with work or whether it's with relaxation, or it's just like, I want to get to the more personal stuff. Like you said, that's, I love that. I love it so much.
And I would say even too, like to follow up with you, like a long time for me is when I actually sit down on my laptop to write an article or a blog post, like that's a long time too. I love it. Like,
sure.
I'm watching, it was funny because we're watching a documentary on HBO right now called I'll Be Gone in the Dark. It's about the Golden State Killer.
Okay.
And about the woman who wrote the book that kind of eventually like led to the information that caught him. And there was a part in there where her husband, who's Patton Oswalt, was Patton Oswalt, was saying, like, you know, if she needed 5 hours of writing, it wasn't that she was writing for 5 hours. She maybe only needed an hour to write, but she needed 2 or 3 hours to like marinate her thoughts and like get set and get in the mindset of like what she wanted to write. And and when he said that, I was like, oh my God, that is me.
Yeah.
Cause like my writing process is pretty slow. Like I can't just like tap away on my board, like, you know, and okay, article's done.
Yeah.
You know, like
you got to wind up.
It's pretty painstakingly slow. Like I go sentence by sentence and I repeat it in my head. Does that flow well? Like, can I make it a little bit more smoother?
Mm-hmm.
No, we need a little bit of a break here. Like I need to say something funny.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and sometimes it takes a while to like get into the rhythm. Like, you know, if I know I'm writing an article for whatever, and I know, and I do it for 4 hours, I'm really only writing for 2.5 of them.
Sure.
Because the rest of the time I'm just kind of like, okay, like trying to think it through and trying to find the right words. And
of course.
When he said that about his former wife, the writer, I was like, oh my God, like that is a beautiful analogy of the writing process for a lot of people.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. That's good. That's good, man. Dude, I'm sure we could sit here. I don't care. Like, this is why it's called the More Than Fitness Podcast, is because I wanted to give myself permission to go down whatever rabbit hole we want to.
I love it. I love just talking shop and not about squat assessment. Love it.
Good. Don't worry. None of that will go on here. I promise you. It's funny, whenever I have on like really more people with PhDs and researchers and stuff, they're like, I need to like brush up on any studies or anything before I come on the podcast? No, it's not that type of podcast. I promise. but cool. This has been really great. I want to ask one more. Sometimes I ask this to people, sometimes I don't, but I feel like you'd be a good candidate for it. If you could pick, and this is anything goes, meaning you could be taller, you could have a better singing voice, you could be faster, you could, whatever it is, if you could pick an alternate career in a different life that isn't what you do now, and again, you could have any type of skill or characteristic about yourself, what would your alternate career be?
I think I would pick two. Can I say two?
Of course.
I would either be a movie critic.
Oh, okay. Makes sense.
Just because I think, like, what better way to spend your day than to, like, I would basically get up, watch a movie, review it, go train and get jacked, come back and watch another movie, review it, and get paid to do that.
Like, what are you doing, Tony? Why are you in the fitness field?
Like that, and there's been a couple times where I've kind of played around with, like on my blog, I have this area called Miscellany.
Yeah.
Where I've played around with some movie reviews. I haven't written one in years because I have a kid and I have no time.
Right.
But I was like, that to me would be the life. Just get paid to watch movies. Like,
I love it.
Week a day. I would fucking love that.
Yeah.
Another one would just be a DJ. Like anyone who knows me, follows me, knows I love techno. I love 90s hip hop.
Yes.
But being like, I feel that like, having the skill, not so much just to like press buttons and make weird noises, but to like the transition songs and remix them and like getting, and just the whole vibe of like getting thousands of people to move and dance to something that you're
it's the
flow, not creating, but you are creating.
You're the guy with the aux cord in the car or at the party that is just like you dance with the vibe of the party, like how it's going, how people are feeling, into the next song.
But yes. But as someone who doesn't drink and like goes to bed at 9 o'clock, like that would not bode well.
You have to find a different lifestyle.
So I don't think many people are going to raves at 6 p.m.
could be something there. You never know.
Yeah, who knows?
You could figure something out.
But I think if I had to pick like an alternate career, I would have chosen one of those two. I think.
That's amazing. I would be a stand-up comedian. I think that, and I would be friends with like Rogan and the podcast. I wouldn't be in the podcasting world. Like that's my dream is to have like all of my friends in the same industry. We can go on each other's podcasts and talk with each other. And then we also, I'm talking about like Rogan and his ring of friends. I'm a 26-year-old white male. Of course I love Joe Rogan. And it's like, and all of his friends and podcasters, they're just friends. And then they also like, it's beneficial to their fans. And you just, spoiled because they're all friends with each other. And it's like, oh, they get to go on each other's podcasts. So it's a win-win-win for everybody. And then stand-up comedian. Yeah. Just making people laugh and being good at that, and storytelling in front of a bunch of people.
That's a talent, man. Like being a stand-up comedian, like I can't imagine how hard that is.
I can't either.
I mean, you watch someone like Chappelle, of course. And,
yeah.
It's just like, it's artful.
Yeah.
He's like a god in that. I mean, as far as stand-up comedy, you have to be freaking smart. Like, I mean, even someone like, think of someone like Colbert or even Jon Stewart. Like,
yeah, of course.
Well, you know, people don't look at them as comedians anymore. They're a little bit more than that, but they are comedians.
Yes.
And like, they are smart as fuck. You have to be intelligent to like be that funny, but then have a message behind it.
Yes, it's an art, basically,
and get a point across. And like, Yeah, that would be a baller career. Sure.
I think it'd be fun, man. I think it'd be really fun. But all right, Tony, I don't want to take up too much of your time. I want to say goodbye for like 2 minutes off air. But go ahead. Where can people find out more about you?
Homebase is my website. So tonygemmacore.com. That's blogs, articles, podcasts, products, everything. Yeah, it's all
movie there. Reviews. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the last one was might have been. I think it was Mission. It might have been, no, maybe it was Sully.
Oh, okay.
With Tom Hanks. I remember I did a review on Sully. I did a review on Ghost Protocol.
Okay.
And I did a review on Whiplash, which I loved. I love that movie.
Okay.
There's a few on there, but you know, they weren't picked up by the Times or anything.
They'll come find you, right? They'll come find you.
Yeah, that's
what it is. All right, Tony, thank you so much for doing this.
Hopefully
we can do it again sometime soon.
Absolutely.
And that is that, my friends. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of the More Than Fitness podcast. And please, if you could help me out a little bit here and leave a rate and review in iTunes, and also take a screenshot and post it up on your IG story. Tag me at MattMcLeod6. I'd love to share it. I'd love to connect with you. I'd love to hear your feedback about the podcast, and also so that we can share the word with other people. I would love to build up this community, build up this tribe of people that we have like you and I, and get the word out there. Also, if you want more free content, you can check the links in the description. I have my free 4-week workout plan, The Ultimate Physique Development. And also, if you want to work with me online, one-on-one for personal coaching, you can check the link in the description as well. And anything else you need, please send me an email, send me a DM. I would love to hear from you. Again, thank you so much for listening.